This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:16 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. Our next story looks at whether measures that parties have tried to put in place to prevent party hopping can actually be enforced. So I'm not necessarily going to go back into all the arguments surrounding party hopping. We have talked about it ad nauseum, but it continues to happen. We discussed it really just yesterday, and today there is a fresh reason to do so. Essentially, last week, Sebatik Adun Hassan Ghani Ameh announced that he was leaving Warisan. He had, in fact, left Warisan, and he was throwing his support behind the Gabungan Rakyat Sabah government, which is led by the Chief Minister of the State, Datuk Sri Hajiji Noor. And Warisan then responded by sending a resignation letter to the Adun, pointing out that it was signed in September last year, along with a video pledge, which includes to remain loyal to the party if he won his seat, and an agreement to resign as Adun should he leave the party or become independent, unless they were in fact sacked. So Warisan Party President Datuk Sri Shafi Abdal said the letter was signed voluntarily, and Warisan will also be submitting this to the State Assembly Speaker, the Governor and the Election Commission, and the next action will be taking a legal route. Shafi also pointed out that many of the elected representatives were facing daily, or has said that many elected representatives were facing daily pressure of intimidation, inducement and harassment to jump sides, to switch sides. And I think what we want to look at is whether something like this is enforceable and what it means, in fact, that it was made. So in essence, there is a video pledge, there is a promise. It's not also the only time that something like this has happened. PKR, for example, which is something we've spoken about in the past, also has a similar deal with candidates being made to sign a legal document prior to GE14 that there would be a 10 million ringgit fine for defections if they were elected. We, however, haven't seen that really come to fruition as of yet. It's been discussed, it's come back into the headlines, but there's no conclusion as to whether or not that's going to go on. And in the past, when we've spoken to lawyers, the indication was that these things are just very difficult to enforce because they rub up against the same things that happen with party hopping all the time, which is the freedom of association and all the rest. But we want to look today at just what it means, what it signifies. If you have questions or thoughts, you can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This again is coming from an Adun who is leaving Warisan, and Warisan is responding by saying, well, then you have to resign, you have to vacate your seat. So now, to get more clarity on this, joining us on the line is Thomas Phan, who's the chairperson of Bersih 2.0. Thomas, thank you so much for taking our call.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you for having me.
So I mentioned this earlier, but this is not the first time an agreement of this nature has been signed. PKR's 10 million fine, for example, where that amount would have to be given to its election candidates, would have to be paid by its election candidates that switch sides after winning. What do you think of agreements like this?
Well, you're right that this is not the first time, and you referred to the 10 million fine by PKR, but I want to take you a bit further, even to 2009 during the Para constitutional crisis that was triggered when three Pakatan assembly person crossed over to BN, which caused the collapse of the state government. And they too had pre-signed letters of resignation, which was then shown by the speaker of Pakatan at that time, Sivakuma. And despite that pre-signed letter and the speaker himself declaring the three seats vacant, the move failed simply because when the three were asked to present themselves before the Sultan of Perak at that time, they denied that they have resigned, and they affirmed their support for BN. So certainly, I think in this case, in Sabah, the speaker is not with Warisan, but from GRS. Certainly, he wouldn't even entertain this letter of resignation, and the Sabate assemblyman just have to declare that he has not resigned. I think it's not going to work.
So there's nothing then that the party themselves can do?
You know, unfortunately, there is actually very little. So the 10 million fine in the work, pre-signed letter of resignation has shown to be not enforceable. So under current law, there is actually very little that can be do unless can be done unless new laws are enacted.
And the video pledge, I'm just going to throw that in there. The video pledge doesn't make any difference either?
No. Legally speaking, it wouldn't make any difference. But politically speaking, it does look bad on the assembly person that he made an oath, swore to, I believe, to God and signed a letter. So, but in Sabah, we have seen that even at the last state election, those who defected to cause the collapse of Warisan, they were not punished. Many of them were re-elected back by the voters. So I think politics in Sabah perhaps is slightly different.
And if we just take a step back and look at some recent examples of hopping as a whole, Amanah recently saw three of its lawmakers in Johor defecting to PKR. Why does inter-coalition hopping happen?
Yeah, so this is a different kind of defection from within the coalition. So perhaps the motivation for them to hop in this case is a bit different from those who hop to the ruling government, for example. So, of course, when you hop to the ruling government, you would expect that there will be some benefits that come along with it. But when you hop within the opposition itself, I think the party themselves have to do some soul-searching that why are their elected representatives leaving them? So, of course, it's not a good thing. It's not a pleasant thing. But I think the Amanah leadership really got to do some soul-searching and ask themselves why, what's the reason? Because, obviously, it cannot be for any kind of position or monetary benefits at all.
And how do you see this impacting dynamics within the coalition?
Well, I think, obviously, we have already heard some Amanah youth leaders kind of warning PKR, things like that. I think it does hurt the relationship between them, but I think they will probably take a step back and look at a bigger picture of their partnership within the Pakatan Harapan coalition, and that probably will be more important than just losing the three, unless more defection happening at the federal level where Amanah MPs are defecting. So I think that probably won't happen. But I think Amanah really got to do some soul-searching, at least at the state level in Johor, why these three are defecting.
And if we look at the recent reasons that have been given for defecting, right, mainly the message that keeps getting pushed out is MPs wanting to serve their constituents better by aligning themselves with the ruling party and therefore gaining more financial access and the like. Do you see this as a valid or a strong reason?
Well, you know, that is the common reason given, isn't it? Because nobody is going to tell you the truth that perhaps they have been offered a better position in cabinet, or they've been offered a GLC position, or even other financial rewards. Nobody is going to tell you that. So they'll tell you is to serve the constituents better. But I think the reality of it that this exposes is that the incumbency advantage, in other words, when you are the ruling government, you have a lot of perks and privilege and access to funds that nobody has. The opposition certainly won't have. So the usage of this advantage to quote unquote buy over the opponent and to buy loyalty in terms of like cushy GLC position and cabinet position, and even immunity from prosecution. I think these are the reality that we have to face that actually contribute to this defection that has been ongoing actually for a year since the Sheraton move. Though, of course, it's not new, but it has been exacerbated since the Sheraton move. And this is going to continue unless we address some of this legal and structural problem head on.
So with that, right, if legally there's just so much that is unenforceable, how else then can parties keep their members accountable?
You know, that's a tough one. You actually need to ask the party. But I believe that party leadership, party vision, and party platform that allow disgruntled members and elected representatives to air themselves, and also the belief that they can win back power, I think that would help a bit. But it's very hard, you know, to offer that compared to, say, on the other side, offering you a once-in-a-lifetime position or once-in-a-lifetime monetary incentive. It is very hard to compare, you know. So, but the party certainly can try to mitigate that by having perhaps a open communication with those who are disaffected.
Do you think that naming and shaming ever does anything?
In some places, perhaps, you know, I think it's very difficult, say, in urban centres where an MP or Adun defect, for them to even show their face or run again. So I think in urban centres, naming and shaming would probably work. But in rural center, where that is politics is more about what can you bring to the table, that may not work, because we see, like I say, in Sabah, some of those who defected, they ran again and they won. You know.
I just wanted to read this message that came in from Nini, who says the EC should put a stop to all this party hopping. It's wasting taxpayers' money. They can resign and leave their seat vacant while it still belongs to the party it represented during election. Why is it so difficult? And I thought I would put that to you, Thomas, to react to.
All right. I mean, first of all, it is not within the EC's mandate or ability to come up with that regulation. You know, it has to be in the law. And the law, as it stands, as I say, the seat goes with the candidate. Our law states that we are voting for a candidate who happens to represent a party. Though we understand that when people vote, most of the time they vote according to party line. So if you want the seat to go with a party, it means changing the electoral system from what we have now, which is first past the post, to a proportional system whereby it is the party that you're voting for, and if a person leaves a party, the seat stay with the party. So this takes a major change in the electoral system. And again, that means that the very people who are guilty of party hopping, the lawmakers and all, they have to agree to that. But I am pleased to say that conversation has started on that, with some politicians suggesting, like Nasri Aziz from UMNO, suggesting just exactly what has been proposed by your listeners.
Thomas, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Most welcome. My pleasure.
That was Thomas Phan, chairperson of Bersih 2.0, talking about essentially whether or not measures that parties have tried to put in place to prevent party hopping can be enforced. Short answer, no, more needs to be done. We are about to head to the 7:30 news and then beyond that to popcorn culture. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.